Welcome to my world. Won't you come on in? Miracles, I guess, still happen now and then. Step into my heart, leave your cares behind. Welcome to my world, built with you in mind. Knock and the door open. Seek and you will find. Ask and you'll be given the key to this world of mine. I'll be waiting here with my arms unfurled, waiting just for you. Welcome to my world. Waiting just for you. Welcome to my world.
Well, eat your heart out, Frankie and Tony. That was old Terrible Tommy playing around with his limited equipment down here in the bunker. And that's our song for the She-Wolves here on Freya's Day. Yeah. Jim Reeves is a big favorite of mine. I haven't practiced his songs enough, but I do like them and I sing them once in a while. I'll probably go out tonight and sing some of them. But anyhow, I hope you enjoyed it. And here we are. It's Freya's Day, July the 17th, 2015, and we're at P.O. Box 401, as usual, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581, and it's we've had some rain this morning. Temperature's supposed to go up into the 80s or 90s today. It's pretty humid. A county fair, I don't think they know what to do, because every time they turn around it's raining this week. This is fair week, and that fair here in this county has been going on for 90 years. 90 years they put on a county fair here, 4-H County Fair. And I really enjoy going out and going through the livestock barns with all the animals and so forth, and also 99 and 99 100% white kids. You rarely see a non-white in the 4-H barn, which tells you a little bit. In fact, it probably tells you a lot. But they're good, clean, wholesome white kids. And it really gives your heart a stir to see them. And it brings back the memories, because I was doing that stuff about 1950. Yeah, pigs and rabbits and a little bit of everything. And my uncle had one of the, I don't know where I told you this or not, but he was a big swine breeder. He had one of the largest pigs I've ever seen in my life. That boar could not turn around in the pen at the fair. He was so big. I would say he was probably about 8 feet long, and I don't know how much he weighed, but he kept winning prizes till he got so heavy he couldn't get up, and they had to make bacon out of him. Well, this article by Leslie Linton Fuller that appeared in Nouveau magazine here in Indiana, I've sent it out to you, but I'd like to go over a few of these questions and answers, because one of the problems we did have, and it was my mistake as much as hers, we went to a restaurant to do the interview, and don't do interviews in a restaurant, because there are too many people yapping and too many glasses clinking and yelling and so forth, and so, and she had a little trouble with her tape recorder too, so it was not the most perfect conditions to have an interview. Most of the questions and answers are pretty straightforward, not bad, but putting that in, that story about Stevenson, the Klan leader and big shot-time politician in Indiana back in the 20s who went to prison for the alleged rape and all kinds of other stuff of a young woman, I thought was a cheap shot. Had nothing to do with me, and there were millions of other Klan people at the day who were perfectly moral people. And I thought that was a real cheap shot at the 20s Klan, even though I was not attracted to the 20s Klan. I mean, of course, I wasn't old enough anyhow, but I was attracted to the original Klan. The Klan of the 20s was more of a nationalistic, rah-rah type Klan. And if you were in business, you joined a Klan. And most of the time, people joined it not so much for the real meaning of the Klan, but to do business with people. So anyhow, that part of it was a cheap shot, and probably wasn't even the author's idea. She works for a black magazine, a black entrepreneur magazine, but that's not who printed this story. People who printed the story is more of a music type magazine. They tied the trial in Portland, Oregon to this story about Stevenson and his true crimes, evidently. So they always come up with that Mulligatawgetasarawha situation where with a, you know, it's a setup. It was a setup. It was just trying to put me out of action. That's all. The Portland trial. But they didn't get me out of action. Yeah, they say I was culpable in the racially motivated homicide. Well, you're either involved or you're not. Anyhow, it goes on down here to say, let's see. He continues to operate a mail-order business. Well, we do have a few things on our website that we do sell, but there's not enough money comes in from that to even pay the bill on the website. It's not cheap to run a big website, so that's sort of funny. And I didn't remember boasting that people from all over the world pay my $20 a month subscription fee to hear his racial views. I didn't say that because it's not true. Very rarely do I get a contribution from overseas. And we're just a small group. Most of you people who subscribe know it. And so I don't know whether she was trying to get the IRS on me there or not. Some of this was joking that didn't come out just exactly joking. When she introduced herself to me, she said that she worked for this African-American publication. And I jokingly said to her, "Wow, you're extremely light-skinned." So she says, "Actually, I am white." And of course, obviously, she was white. And then she asked me what my response was, her working for black publications. And I think there was some other things said there, but I said, are you having babies with black men? And she laughs in shock, realizing it has taken Metzger 10 seconds to introduce the topic of a white female reporter having sexual intercourse with black men. Well, of course I'm interested in that, because if you're working for a black magazine, I know how black guys go after the white women. So it's very logical that she might have black boyfriends. And when I said I came back to Indiana to get out of the high rent in California, I said here that I could live free in Indiana. Well, I could, nobody lives free. So I have my expenses and upkeep on a house, and had to put a roof on the house and all kinds of stuff. Then she said, are you the most dangerous man in America? That, to me, when Morris Deese said that, I just chuckled. I thought that was funny as hell. The most dangerous man in America was George Bush Jr. and Cheney, either one of them. And Obama is not the most dangerous man in the country, because he's totally remote controlled as a puppet of Manchurian candidate, like I called. Morris Deese, for making that statement, sort of strange, because he's tried to keep anything about me out of his publication, wanting people to think he destroyed me in Portland, Oregon, way back when. The question, will you say unequivocally that you're against acts like cross-burning? This shows you how backward some of these reporters are. I haven't heard of any cross-lightings in Indiana or any place around here. To which I said, it doesn't produce anything. Why would I be for something that was not productive? And I told her, I mean, if I thought cross-lightings would gain a lot of support and all that kind of stuff, I'd be lighting them off every weekend. But it's unproductive. Just like wearing a Klan robe or handing out a lot of the literature they hand out in the street. It doesn't go anywhere. Then I said, if you're going to kill anyone, kill a congressman. Well, I meant a crooked, corrupt, rotten congressman, which probably most of them are. But the feds will probably be looking at that. We better watch that boy. Yes, I can sit down at the table with black persons, and I can get along fine if they want to get along. You were once arrested for cross-burning. Well, that situation was a situation I've explained many times. Frank Silva, who later became one of the order members, was operating a Klan up in L.A., and he was bound and determined that I come to this because they were going to have Klan people there, they were going to have National Socialists there, they were going to have several people from different organizations. And he wanted me to be there. And I rejected the offer for 2 weeks. Said, no, I don't want to go. Finally, I gave in, which was a bad mistake. Anytime the Klan and the National Socialists get together, there's going to be problems. So the Klan part of the meeting was that the Klan were going to light this cross, and they had a fire permit to do it. So I'm standing up there on a little rise by a house looking down, and they were torching this 15-foot cross. And all of a sudden, all the cops in L.A. showed up, plus the fire department. They said it was cross-burning, but that's not what the charge was. Burning refuse material without a permit. In other words, they called the cross garbage. Refuse material is garbage. I thought that was quite ironic. anyhow, whether you were involved with a Klan group that was there as representing themselves, or whether you're not, they arrested all of us. I was standing there eating a sandwich, minding my own business. Then they tried to bring up the canard that it was scaring black people in the neighborhood. Well, it was way out in the middle of nowhere. I don't think there was... There might have been one black living around there someplace, but I didn't have any notice he was. And we certainly didn't get this together to terrorize the blacks. Then she went on to say that years ago when she talked to me, I wanted a race war. I don't think I ever said I want a race war, because a race war is going to really get nasty. But I probably said there's probably a race war coming. It's probably one right now, but the white race is losing. So everything don't always get into the answers in an interview. Then I said, I still believe in racial separation. Of course I do. And I've had plenty of contact with black separatists. I haven't had hardly any contact with black separatists for a couple of decades. I think there's one down in Atlanta, Georgia, calls me once in a while, say, what's up? But I don't really want a race war, but I don't think there's much we can do about it. If there's going to be, there's going to be. There's certainly going to be a lot more violence between the races. Well, she asked me, if you no longer desire a race war, in a perfect world, what would it look like? Well, number one, I told her there is no perfect world. She didn't print it. I said I'd cut off immigration, all immigration. We got too many people anyhow. The demographics are getting lopsided. And we try to figure out some kind of peaceful separation with the blacks. But unfortunately, I really don't think it's going to happen, because they think they've got it made along, especially with all the whites that are promoting the black race. They're the worst problem we've got. And I'd return a lot of people to Mexico. Well, I return every mestizo I could get my hands on, that's for sure. We put in 1954, I think it was, we shipped over 1 million Mexicans out of this country, mainly from the Southwest. That was Dwight D. Eisenhower, so I'm not advocating anything any different than the Republican Dwight D. Eisenhower. Okay, let's see what else here. What about interracial people, she said? In your perfect world, where is their home? I think I told her again, there is no perfect world. Well, I said it's bringing the races down, all the races. It's like hybrid animals. I don't think she understood this. Any veterinarian will tell you that you bring two types of animals together, you know, one grand champion horse and one plow horse, and breed them together, you're not going to get a grand champion racehorse, and you're not going to get a champion plow horse. You're going to get something in between that isn't worth anything. I don't think she understood that, or didn't want to understand it. Hence, natural selection is the way to go. That's what I said, yeah. Would you ban interracial marriage? Probably. Especially if we had racial separation working as a working program. But it's almost time to throw up your arms and say it's all over. What I meant there is that everything's coming apart at the seams, and there's not going to be any reasonable, educated way of achieving our goals or anybody else's goals. It's going to develop into anarchy, Mad Max. That's the only thing I can see. Where's the place for the disabled and the elderly in your world? Well, I'm elderly, and I want to stay in my world. Well, we, of course, many disabled people are geniuses and operate very well and produce a lot for the tribe, for the community. I'm not for keeping mongoloids alive and people with severe birth defects. Like I've told you many times before, in the old days, I had a cousin who I used to see quite a bit. She had cerebral palsy and she was twisted into unbelievable situation. Her whole body was twisted up, but she was alive. She sat in a wheelchair and drooled, and she couldn't talk, and she couldn't do anything to serve herself. She had to be spoon-fed in a whole bit. And she was a horrible drag on her mother and father, who took care of her. I think she lived for 39 years, but I never will forget that. And the only humane thing for people like that is to put them humanely to death. And yes, I do support that. And also I support people that want to do themselves in or commit suicide. As far as I'm concerned, that's perfectly all right. That you know, if they say a woman's body's her own, she can have a kid or not. Well, why can't you, if you decide not to continue life, why can't you commit suicide without having the law on your back? Ben Klassen had two strokes, the creator Ben Klassen, and he was in bad health for the last 2 or 3 years of his life, for sure. And he committed suicide. And the right-wing guys that didn't like Ben Klassen anyhow, because he wasn't a Christian, said some very nasty, horrible things about Ben Klassen because he was a coward that he committed suicide. Well, you'll find in history some of the most brave, strong people in history, military men and everything else, have committed suicide for one reason or another. Obviously, if they do it dishonorably, like if they rat out their friends and like that, and they commit suicide, that's one thing. But I respected the Japanese highly that if it got to that point and they had done something wrong or something that didn't serve their people, that they committed harakiri. I respect that. And I think it's a sick Christian position to force people to go on living with tubes in them and everything else. I remember when my wife died. At the end, they had all kinds of tubes in her and everything else. And I let it go for a while, but then I said, pull the plug. Pull the plug. I know she would have wanted it that way, too. In fact, she probably would have wanted it sooner than I did. Okay, do you believe in European people are superior to the people from Africa? Well, if they're white people from Africa, if they're white South Africans, I don't think we're superior to. I think that they're very advanced white people. If there's some, I think there's some still left down there. But as far as the black race, of course we're superior to the black race. And then she got into this about the pyramids and stuff. And I think she was inferring that the blacks are right when they say that black people built the pyramids, which is the biggest bunch of bullshit I ever heard. Farrakhan even pushes that stuff. Well, I don't know for sure whether they were blonde, blue-eyed people, but they certainly weren't Negroes. Egypt was Negro, pretty much Negro-free up until the 25th dynasty. And that's when they let the Nubians come in from the south. They put them to work as slaves first. And then they put them in the household of servants and so forth. And then the next thing, just like we've done, put them in the army. And within about 25 years, they had a civil war, and the white race went down the tube. And that's what happened there. And you see what's left in Egypt now. There are some white people in Egypt. I've known some, but not many. Not many. And like I said to her, I said, well, you know, white people, white Aryans, could be blonde hair, blue-eyed, but if they're out there a lot in the sun, they're going to get a tan and they're going to be darker, but they're not going to be Negroes. Then she said that I said that I believed heavily tanned, blonde, blue-eyed white people built the pyramids using slave labor. Well, yeah, I believe that. I don't say they all were blue-eyed and blonde, because a large share of the Aryan race is not blonde and blue-eyed. There's plenty of brown-eyed and green-eyed and brown-haired and even black-haired Aryans. But I guess she still thinks that the Negro story helps her job or something about the pyramids. I don't think, to be perfectly honest, I don't believe that anybody on earth built the pyramids, because they're so ancient, so much more ancient than people think. However, humans could have been used to construct the pyramids. I don't know. These are some of the things you ask yourself. Then she asked, do you have contact with the Klan in Indiana? Well, no, I haven't. I was contacted by one Klansman that lives about 20 miles from me, but we never got together. You see, the Klan pushes Christianity all the time, or even identity Christianity, and if you don't believe it, well, it's right in their oath. If you don't believe in Jesus Christ, you can't technically be a Klansman. Well, since I'm an atheist and a Midas writer and natural selectioner, evidently they got the word that don't talk to that guy. It's just as well, because from what you see in the news and what you hear from a lot of these Klan people today, they just don't have what it takes intellectually to really be effective. I'm sorry, but that's just the case. So I don't know anything about the Klan in Indiana. When I interviewed your associate, Jack Butler, I don't remember anybody. I don't even know Jack Butler. I don't know what she's talking about. He said Jesus was not Jewish. Well, that's the argument that goes through the white racial movement and has ever since I've been involved. There was a Jesus, but he was not Jewish. Well, I don't know what he would have been if he had been a real person and born where he was. So I said, I've heard that too. Anyhow, as a matter of historical fact, do you think Jesus was not Jewish? And I refer them to Jesus Never Existed. And, of course, probably a lot of the people who believe in a lot of the things I say don't believe in that. Probably a large number of people that read my stuff still believe that there was a Jesus. And I think there's adequate proof on Jesus Never Existed website to show you that it's all a concoction. Yes, let's see here, what else? You once believed that God created several different Adams and Eves for each racial group. Well, I guess way back I did. That's what Christianity preached, and I was trying to believe in Christianity. Now that you're an atheist, what do you believe? I believe in separate racial development or evolution, natural selection, and so forth. Mother Nature and the laws of Mother Nature, they never change. But I don't know for sure, I said. Hell, I think I'm from Orion, constellation of Orion myself. And she got a big deal out of that. She wanted to make a big deal out of that. I told her, I'm kidding, but I don't know. Nobody seems to know for sure that the different races may have been seeded from genetic material from other constellations. I think there's, it sure as hell a lot more, makes a lot more sense than the Christian gobbledygook and being swallowed by a whale and all that kind of stuff. Then I kidded her around. I'm from Orion. And watch out, I might zap you. What do I know? Well, I think there's a lot of good science fiction and also research that supports some interesting questions. None of us really have the answer. The constellation of Orion lines up with the pyramids, and you can get a book about that. And very coincidental that the arrangement of these constellation of Orion matches up to the way that the pyramids are set up. So anyhow, that's my side issue. You can believe it or not, but I think there's something went on here a long, long time ago that has not been proven or disproven. She asked why I became an atheist. Well, I got to reading anti-Abrahamic books, and like from Thomas Paine. I think his book was the first that I read that started to move me away from Christianity. But those tremendous numbers of our leaders over the centuries have been non-believers. Many of the founding fathers were non-believers in this country. Of course, they paid the price, like Thomas Paine. They didn't want to give him much credit, and they wanted to bury his body and by his parents up in the northeast part of the country. I forget which state. And the Christians interceding, they wouldn't let him bury Thomas Paine in the United States. So Thomas Paine is buried in England, which shows you how broad-minded the Christians are. And then I said, behind every war is religion. And there is. Almost all wars are instigated by religion. Yeah. Oh, let's see here. Well, I don't know whether to go on with this because you can read it yourself. Oh, yeah. Do you hate black people? Well, number one, hate is an abstract word that I don't accept because it's too important to be a four-letter word. I mean, if you really hate somebody or hate something, then it's totally philosophical and biological. I mean, it's so bad that there's nothing can explain it. Putting a word like hate on it doesn't come close to what pure, unadulterated hatred is. And so I don't use it because I don't hate black people because they're black. I hate what they do, and I hate how they've been used as a pawn to screw up the white race in this country and any place else they go in the world. But sitting around slobbering and mumbling and going bananas, I don't. And then they said, hate the Jews. Do you hate the Jews? And I said, no. Now that's going to get a lot of people. I know that right wing is going to pick up on that. Well, here again, I hate what the leadership of the Jews do, the Zionists and all those people. I hate that that the Jews foisted Christianity on us, because they're the ones that began, it's where it came from. Nobody could deny it. But as far as hating Jews on the street, or like I told her, I worked for Jews for 5 or 6 years in up in L.A. And I got to be honest, they treated me right. They paid me good. They hated to see me go. They didn't berate me for my John Birch Society membership or like that. I just can't do like some people want to do. And that's just see somebody coming down the street and just automatically go into a frenzy of hate. You know, I can't do it. I tend to take people one at a time. Okay. Do I still believe Judaism controls the world? Well, it's part, certainly, of the control mechanism through the B'nai B'rith and all the Masonic organizations and their stranglehold on Christianity, which in turn controls much of business and much of money in the world. I think any of these, Judaism, Christianity, Mohammedism, they're all dangerous, and they all end up being corrupt. But it's even bigger than that, too, you know. She said, do you dispute the Holocaust? Well, I dispute anything that is represented in one word, just like hate and love, you know. Holocaust is meant to close off all discussion, because if you don't believe that word, then you don't believe that 6 million Jews died. Well, I don't believe that word, and I don't believe 6 million Jews died. There's too many Jews around. Like I've said, 3 million Jews were in Israel or Palestine in 1945, and there were thousands of Jews dispersed around the world. In Argentina alone, there was about 1 million of them. So it's a trick question. Do you believe in the Holocaust? And I don't fall for that trick. When I said the numbers, yeah, well, I didn't mean I believed that 6 million Jews died. And like I say, recent research from my belief is that the Zionists controlled the whole thing. And you had Zionists dealing with the Nazis, and they made a deal, and the Zionists didn't do anything to track down high-ranking National Socialists until they were embarrassed into it by other people who weren't even involved in searching them out, just happened to accidentally find out they lived next door to one, like Eichmann. So there's all kinds of secret, crazy shit that goes on in history. And they don't talk about the Sephardic Jews and the Ashkenazim Jews. And the Jews and the Germanized Jews in Germany hated those Sephardics that came in from the East and set up their money-changing tables on the street. They didn't care. They were all for Hitler to get rid of those people. They don't talk about that much. And I did say that there's no more wild Jew hater in the world than another Jew. Look, that's been proven over and over again. Well, anyhow, let's see. I don't think we need to go on with this. If you have any questions about my responses to this article, just email me and I'll tell you what either I meant or whether I was misquoted or what. People always are concerned about money. It almost makes all of them pseudo-Jews, these reporters. Like the race-themed merchandise, hunting license for illegal immigrants, custom hats emblazed with swastikas or the numeral 88, and Metzger takes cash, credit card, checks, and PayPal. If I had to live on the money that we get off of those items we sell on a website, I'd have starved to death a long time ago. Oh yeah, she asked me about Foote, who killed those 9 Negroes at the church down in South Carolina. And I said, you know, as far as I know, he's never contacted me or never given his name if he did, or given the right name. But if he did write to me, I'd write back. I'd maybe send him a book or whatever. And I agree with most of what he said. I think probably all of what he said in his manifesto, and we put it on our website. So I don't apologize for anything, and I'll associate with whoever I want to. And if they don't like it, they can kiss my white ass. That's the way I look at things. I did give a broadside to this Eli Lilly down here in Indianapolis, this drug company that is involved in feeding drugs to all these young people and kids and old people and turning people into drug addicts, making billions of dollars. At least she did mention that, what I talked about. Yeah, and have you received death threats? Well, like I told her. I did think I did get one on the phone about 6 months ago, but that obviously that call was not from Indiana. But like I told you before, I had a contract put on my life once. I had 2 or 3 attacks. I had a firebombing of my house. So yeah, I've had a little problem over the years, but nothing that couldn't be solved. Interestingly enough, the police never solve any of these things. Well, I take that back. They did the contract on my life because they had an informant involved with this biker club, and he tipped them off that they had a contract on me, the druggies, drug dealers. So they took them out of action. But normally, anything that happens to a racist is never solved. Like Richard Butler's church being bombed up in Hayden Lake, Idaho. And there's been a lot of those kind of things. Well, that's it for that. There's several questions there I didn't cover, but I didn't want to bore you. So any questions you've got, you can email me. If you happen to get Netflix, no, it's Hulu on your satellite or cable. There's a movie called The Bridge. It's a series, and it's a terrific series. It's about how the Mexican cartels operate down below the border and even on this side of the border. And it is very brutal, and it involves a struggle between the CIA and the DEA, which probably goes on from time to time. One side was trying to put the cartels out of business, and the other side was wanting to use the profits from the drug business for CIA purposes. We do know that that happened at least a few decades ago when the CIA was bringing plane loads of narcotics in from Central America, part of that Iran-Contra thing, and then shipping them into the ghetto in Los Angeles and places like that for the blacks to distribute it around. But anyhow, it's if you're squeamish, don't watch it. Because those cartel boys, they didn't mess around, I'll tell you that. And you got to give this latest escaped drug lord credit. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of planning went into that. for a mile tunnel from under his prison cell. Wow. He had to have a lot of help for that. Well, I see the black KKK is at it again in St. Louis. Police officer in St. Louis shot in ambush in Central West End. Search on for the shooter. Gunman was described as a black man between 18 and 22 years old, 5'7" to 5'8". Thin build with medium complexion. He wore a black hat. So it's going to be more and more and more of this because it's guerrilla warfare. It's the beginnings of guerrilla warfare. Well, this is interesting. I forget what magazine this is in. Suddenly, with a single flap of the Angel of History's wings, America has experienced a shuddering change. The American swastika has finally become toxic, a liberation that last month seemed so impossible that we'd forgotten to bother to think about it. One doesn't waste energy worrying over the fact that America controls over 700 military bases in 63 countries and maintains a military presence in 156 countries, or that Israel has staged a civilian slaughtering war approximately every other year since 2006, or that in America there is no constitutionally guaranteed right to vote, or that unregulated pyramid schemes fleece middle Americans out of $10 billion to $20 billion a year, or that private organization runs our presidential debates, sponsored by the same corporations that underwrite Democratic conventions, and on and on and on and on. Wow. That's interesting. I think they're talking about the American swastika being the Confederate flag. Much of what was said there was very true. While all this other stuff's going on, we're an empire killing people all over the world and sending military people all over the world and all that other stuff. They get you all excited about the Confederate flag. And I like the Confederate flag, but not when things like this cover up what's really, really bad. While ignorant or insensate bitter enders will continue to screech, there's no going back. This thing is toxic, even to the Republican backbenchers. You could see that on a Capitol Hill last week, late Wednesday night, Republicans sedulously repealed a Democratic amendment banning this flag for treason against the U.S. government from U.S. cemeteries. Dozens of Democrats then stood shoulder to shoulder on the House floor to all but accuse their colleagues across the aisle of evil. Let's see. Imagine the impossibility of them doing the same on, say, gun control. The Republicans embarrassed backtracked, and the amendment sponsored Representative Ken Calvert, a Republican of California, issued a statement disclaiming responsibility. It wasn't me, blaming his leadership instead. Or watch the awe-inspiring speech of the Republican South Carolina state representative who burst into tears begging her party mates to finally come to their senses. Quote, I have heard enough about heritage. I have a heritage. I am a lifelong South Carolinian. I am a descendant of Jefferson Davis, okay? But that does not matter. Well, it should matter. So progress, right? The Republican Party, or at least more of it than we ever would have dreamed, abandoned yesteryear's bigotry, proving that progress is possible. People can change, right? But do they? Not so fast. Let's not forget the juxtaposition. At almost precisely the same moment, Donald Trump announced his presidential campaign with the immortal words, when Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best, they're sending people that have lots of problems. And they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And immediately, Trump shot to the top of the Republican charts. With a bullet, he's now the most popular candidate among the GOP likely voters. 4 points ahead of Jeb Bush. There's an enormous amount to learn in this juxtaposition about how conservatism works at its deepest levels. It drives liberals crazy when conservatives dress themselves in the clothes of the great social injustice movements of the past, when they avow that they were, that if he were alive now, Martin Luther King would be a Republican. As I recall, he was a Republican back when he was alive. A lot of people don't remember that. When they compare their crusades to force pregnant women to give birth to Mahatma Gandhi's March to the Sea. This is not a new development. Indeed, it's baked into reactionary cake. Love those reactionaries. Conservatives understand that the direction of human history is not on their side. Well, I don't know about that. I think I might disagree with that, but not the conservatives we see around today. These are not conservatives. Conservatives are trying to conserve the race, trying to conserve the good things and of the country and so forth. But these are not conservatives. These are just money corporation people. That other things equal, civilization does tend towards inclusion. No, it doesn't. Not, it has to be pushed by the system. Millions and millions of dollars have to be pushed on race mixing. I mean, they've spent billions on race mixing. And still, you'd think it'd even be worse than it is, but it's not. That is the great source of their anger, and that, too, is the source of the compulsion to dress reaction in the raiment of liberation. Politically, it is the only way. Well, there is, however, another parallel right-wing drive, the other side of the reaction's Mobius strip, the same side really. It emerges, for instance, in the phrases like Barry Goldwater's campaign slogan, "In your heart, you know he's right," or "Silent majority," Richard Nixon's phrase, deployed in a November 69 speech 2 weeks after the largest anti-war demonstration in human history, the National Moratorium Day, when approximately 2 million Americans from all walks of life in the cities and small towns alike took the day off work or school to protest the Vietnam War. And to be perfectly honest, everybody should have protested that war, especially now that you know what it was really all about. I did. They expressed a core conservative contention that there are certain things that a vast majority of Americans know to be true, even if propriety or the liberal thought police, what Nixon called by implication the silencing minority, do not allow them to say. Well, that's the press. That's what they do in the media. And they can't deny it. Well, they can deny it. Yeah. The skill and determination deployed by conservatives, and I don't support the conservatives, remember that, in convincing each other the vast majority of Americans and all real Americans believe what they do is bottomless. The Gallup poll, as Phyllis Schlafly, and God, she must be 100 years old. I knew her way back in the 60s. Explained in 64 that they ask a lot of questions of very few people until they come up with the answers that please the New York kingmakers. Like the Jews and the corporate leaders, huh? How about that? Why don't you say that, Phyllis? This particular understanding of the gap between the public profession and the private confession is one of five or six things that most fundamental to conservative thought. Well, a lot of the people who are going for Trump are not conservatives. They're just working class people that are pissed off. The spectacle of Republicans lowering a flag could not be more public, but it was hypocritical as hell because they don't give a shit about that flag any more than they did the Southern strategy about conning the white Southerners to jump ship and go with the Republicans. The act of a Republican anonymously telling a pollster that she really believes about the candidate with guts to call Mexicans what they really are, which is a barely human vermin, is not so public. Well, you should make it public because it's true. Significantly, one of the two polls that gives Trump ahead by 4 points was staged by YouGov, which does its polling online without requiring respondents to talk to another, possibly judgmental human being about as private as a political act could be. Another eminently private political act, of course, is entering a voting booth, which was what Barry Goldwater was trying to encourage when he invited people to have the courage to vote what they knew in their hearts. The work of conservative politics is at bottom the attempt to create the conditions to flush out the forbidden truths that Americans supposedly bear in their breast, the conscience of a conservative. Yeah, I read that book a long time ago. To borrow another Goldwater idiom, from the realm of secrecy into the arena of policy. Timing, though, is everything. The annals of conservative history are full of documents not meant for public consumption, theorizing over the standard fall question of for how long time needs to be abided before the subterranean truth can practically be surfaced, and how the ground can be best prepared for the crucial moment. The Cato Institute, 1983, Leninist strategy for privatizing Social Security. The Discovery Institute, 1998, Wedge document for undoing the teaching of evolution. The discipline is precisely what demented Mr. Trump lacks most. I don't know. I don't think he's demented. And discipline is precisely what demented Mr. Trump lacks most. Oh, I read that. This helps explain why Trump business finds Republicans in such political disarray. Soon after Trump's immigration utterances, Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona, 95% lifetime rating with the American Conservative Union, 99% from the Koch brothers, you know who they are, Americans for Prosperity, called for Maricopa County Republican Party to pull its sponsorship of last weekend's Trump campaign rally. I don't think that Trump's views are reflective of the party, particularly in Arizona, a border state. That's bullshit. You can't tell me that. He also called Trump coarse. Well, we need more coarse politicians. That's our problem. That was the old way to play it. Arizona Governor Jan Brewer, on the other hand, was thrilled to read the political cues differently. She said, "I believe that Mr. Trump is telling it like it really, truly is." Arizona's Republican rank and filers ecstatic to finally find someone to say what they know in their hearts to be true. Plainly agreed. Thousands of them turned out to the Phoenix Convention Center to hear Trump cry. The silent majority is back, and we're going to take our country back. All these figures, the censorious Flake, the welcoming Brewer, and of course the Donald himself, pose as daring truth tellers. This liberal wrote this. The real truth teller in this business, however, was Lindsey Graham. What an asshole. He's harvesting praise for being the only Republican contender willing to call Donald Trump out. He is such a mealy-mouthed rat, at Lindsey Graham. But note, I think he's... No, that's the other one that's married to the chink. But note how Graham hardly criticized the substance of what Trump wants to achieve. Graham, too, thinks we need to secure the border. Everybody said that since 1960. I know, I was there every time. We got to secure the border. We got to secure the border. We got to secure the border. Bullshit. Neither party wanted to secure the border. They're making too much money off of it. And their suppression of the working class in Mexico through the corporate dictatorship. In abject denial of the fact that the border is more secure by any objective measure than it's been in a generation, well, that doesn't mean shit. He blamed 9/11 on undocumented immigration. Well, they did leave a bunch of Saudi Arabians in. Instead of his moral objections, took a back. Oh, wait a minute, boys. I'm having a Mac attack. We have to reject this demagoguery. If we don't, we will lose, and we will deserve to lose. That gives the game away. And I think it's a very cynical act by the Democrats through Hillary Clinton. I think she's promoting Trump in a back-ass way, in a roundabout way. I think Hillary is doing some very devious things behind the scenes. She wants Trump to be the man she got to run against. I've never seen anything that lays bare the core lineaments of conservatism so neatly. There is our tribe, which is good, true, and pure, and there are those other tribes who are existential threats to you and me and must be suppressed in order for good to be preserved. We all know this, even if they don't allow us to say this. If anything, the lowering of the Confederate flag, which is the Southern battle flag in South Carolina, opens space for this particular new longing to air this other silent truth for more freely, which means to me that the whole lowering of the flag has been a setup from the beginning. This is important. Conservatism is like bigotry, whack-a-mole, the quantity of hatred. Best I can tell from 17 years of close study of 60 years of right-wing history, remains the same. Removing the flag of the Confederacy, raising the flag of immigrant hating, the former doesn't spell some new Jerusalem of tolerance. Remember, tolerance is suicide. The latter doesn't mean that conservatism's racism has finally been revealed for all to see. The push-me-pull-me of private sentiment and public profession will always remain in motion and in tension. Whoa. Liberals of the strategic bent should pay close attention for those moments in which the tension between them becomes most palatable. They reveal potential offensive wedges, opportunities to sow just the sort of confusion we see between Jeff Flake's utterances and Jan Brewer's. This is the way the operational trust among Republican politicians can be degraded. The better to make their unity come fall of 2016 much harder. But what are you going to do about Bernie? What you going to do, Democrats, about Bernie? He's nipping at your heels big time. Yeah, Hillary, what are you going to do about Bernie? Smart Democratic politicians now have a useful script. Ask, are you for Donald Trump or against him? Politically, that opportunity is precious. You might say, ask Senator Mark Kirk of Illinois. Donald Trump's name hangs conspicuously on his tower along a gorgeous vista on the Chicago River. As with the Confederate battle flag, would you support taking it down? I love it. I love when they eat each other alive, both parties, because both parties deserve to be eaten alive. But you watch and see. It'll come out sooner or later that Hillary's got big money and she's sneaking it into the behind the scenes into the Trump situation, even though he doesn't need the money. That's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow, which is Saturn's day, and we'll see if we can raise some more hell.
Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Come on. Always look on the right side of life. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You you must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life.
Your niggas in here now. I like it like this. All the minorities. The white folks, it's okay that you came too. The brave white people came. But you know, white folks are sensitive. They're like little white rabbits. They'll get the fuck out of a place. You know that. Let's go, let's go, let's go. Then you got them ballsy white people. That nigger doesn't intimidate me. I'll stay till the sun rises. We'll see if this is a nigger vampire. Look at this white woman. Don't stare at me like that. This white lady, look how you're looking at me. I have jungle eyes. I don't miss shit. You are staring at me like I've landed from the planet Nigger Taurus. You should see your face. Funny, but I like it. I like it. It's very nice. You're very pretty, and it's very nice. It's very pleasant. And he gonna kick your ass. Looking at that nigger. Maybe you a nigger. I don't want anybody white to be offended by me. Don't be offended. My parents are white. Please relax. And I have to keep you here long enough for my nigger friends to steal your car, so we'll be here for a minute. They said, you do the jokes, we'll get the rides. It's tickle me. I'm going to explain something to you. See, I watch a white audience. I study them. And black performers, white people, they talk about Chinese, they talk about Mexicans, they talk about Indians, they talk about everybody. And you guys, your language, your thing, you're into it. Because I study, you're just laughing like you stare, and you just laugh. You have no sense of humor on you. You just, your whole body, you're into it. But the minute you talk about white folks, that bullshit just... Make that nigger. Stop saying nigger. I'm getting a nigger headache. I can't. Make the nigger stop saying nigger. White folks made up nigger and don't want me to say it. Ain't that a bitch? You made it up. You shouldn't have made it up. You fucked up. You shouldn't have made up nigger. And you made up a song to go with it. Please don't make me sing the song. Eeny, meeny, miny. You know the goddamn song I'm talking about. And you change the words when you see black folks. Catch a tiger. Have they gone? Hey, so you fucked up. I say nigga all the time. I say nigga 100 times every morning. It makes my teeth white. Nigga, 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 nigga. I say it, you think it, what a small white world. But you don't have any problem saying Arnold Schwarzenegger. I may not know about the space program, but I know nigger when I hear it. You guys love saying his name. Schwarzenegger. Oh, Arnold nigger. Oh, Mr. Nigger. Schwarzenegger. I didn't say it. I was hoping he'd marry Shirley Temple Black and she'd be Mrs. Shirley Temple Black nigger, but it didn't work out that way. Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's the only white man to make a movie that scared the fuck out of me. Terminator, that shit scared me. I had nightmares for 6 months. A white man that wouldn't die, that fucked me up. I threw my knife at the screen. Stab that motherfucker! Stab him!